The Foresight Chronicles by John Galsworthy, dramatized by David Spencer. With Dirk Bogarde as Galsworthy, Alan Howard as Soames, Amanda Redman as Fleur, and Gary Bond as Michael Mont. Episode 12.
On the 11th of January last, I was visited by a clerk in the employ of the society who had overheard a conversation.
The shareholders' meeting of the Providential Premium Reassurance Society was in progress. The board had unanimously decided to leave it to Soames Foresight to acquaint the shareholders with the unfortunate circumstances of Mr. Elderson's previous dealings and sudden flight.
Members of your board into the light. In these circumstances, we came to the conclusion that there was nothing for it but to wait and see. 6 weeks ago, however, an accidental incident seems to have warned your late manager that Sir Lawrence and I still entertained suspicions, for I received a letter from him practically admitting that he had taken secret commission on the German business and asking me to inform the board that he had gone abroad and left no property behind him. This statement we have been at pains to verify. In these circumstances, we had no alternative but to call you together and lay the facts before you.
Sir?
No, Mr. Sodrey.
I wish to ask you, sir, why you didn't inform the board when you first heard of this, sir.
You are aware, I presume, that such an accusation, unless it can be fully substantiated, is a matter for criminal proceedings.
No, it would have been privileged.
As between members of the board, perhaps, but any leakage would have rendered us liable. It was a mere case of word against word.
Perhaps Sir Lawrence Mont will give us his view of that.
You must remember, sir, that Mr. Elderson had enjoyed our complete confidence for many years. He was a gentleman, and speaking for myself, an old schoolfellow of his, I preferred in common loyalty to give his word preference while keeping the matter in mind.
Oh, what's the chairman got to say about being kept in the dark?
We are all perfectly satisfied, sir, with the attitude of our co-directors in a very delicate situation. You will kindly note that the mischief was already done over this unfortunate assurance, so that there was no need for undue haste.
I don't agree. We might have had that commission out of him if he'd been tackled properly. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Botterill.
I take it from you then, sir, that these two directors represent the general attitude of the board, and that the board were content to allow a suspected person to remain manager. The question for us shareholders would seem to be whether a board who placed confidence in such a person and continued it after their suspicions were aroused are the right people to direct this important concern.
Mr. Talby.
It's a serious matter, this gentleman. I propose that the board withdraw and leave us to discuss it.
I second that.
Very well, if that is your wish, gentlemen, we shall be happy to comply with it. Will those who favour the motion hold up their hands?
Yes.
Carried.
Foresight. Our number's up, I think. Hey, Foresight?
The thing wants tackling. Chairman's not the man for the job.
Warning to us all, Foresight, against loyalty. It's not in the period. Fontenoy.
Well, Mr. Foresight, hope you're satisfied. A pretty damn mess. If I'd been the chairman, I'd never have withdrawn. Always keep hounds under your eye, won't? Take it off and they'll go for you. Wish I could get among them with a whip. I'd give it to those two heavy, pug-faced chaps. They mean business. Unless you've got something up your sleeve, Mr. Foresight, we're dished.
What should I have up my sleeve?
But damn it, sir, you put the chestnuts in the fire. It's up to you to pull them out. I can't afford to lose these fees.
Good, my dear Fontenay.
You may lose more than your fees.
Can't. They may have Eagles Court tomorrow. Take a loss off my hands. The country drives you to the wall, skins you to the bone, expects you to give them public service gratis. It can't be done, Mont. Can't be done.
Yes, well, I mean, I appreciate...
I'm watching my own funeral. It'll all be in the papers, and my reputation for sound judgment gone forever. None of the Forsytes will follow my advice like sheep again. It'll be a nasty jar for old Gradman and injure my reputation on the picture market. But at least Fleur needn't know, that's one comfort. Just look at them all, carrying on as if there's a corpse in the room. Well, I'm not going to show any white feather. They can howl and shake their fists. I'm not going to be dictated to.
Well, indeed, you want us...
Will you come back in, please, gentlemen?
Thank you.
Well, gentlemen, we await your pleasure.
Before we take any resolution, Mr. Chairman, we'd like to know what assurances you can offer us against anything of this sort happening in the future.
In the nature of things, sir, none whatever. But you can hardly suppose that if we had known our manager was not worthy of our confidence, that we should have continued him in the post for a moment.
That's just the point, sir. Till you did know, and yet there the fellow was for months afterwards, cheating the society for all he was worth.
Allow me a word.
Sir Lawrence Mont.
Speaking for myself, I find it impossible to accept the generous attempts of the chairman to shoulder a responsibility which clearly rests on me. If I made a mistake of judgment in not disclosing our suspicions, I must pay the penalty. And I think it will clear the situation if I tender my resignation to the meeting.
I apparently am the other incriminated director. How very good. I am not conscious of having done anything but my duty from beginning to end of this affair. I am confident that I made no mistake of judgment, and I consider it entirely unjust that I should be penalized. You owe it to me that the policy has been dropped. You owe it to me that you have no longer a fraudulent person for a manager. And you owe it to me that you were called together today to pass judgment on the matter. I have no intention whatever of singing small. But there is another aspect to this affair. I am not prepared to go on giving my services to people who don't value them. I have no patience with the attitude displayed this afternoon. If anyone here thinks he has a grievance against me, let him bring an action. I shall be happy to carry it to the House of Lords if necessary. I have been familiar with the city all my life, and I have not been in the habit of meeting with suspicions and ingratitude. If this is an instance of present manners, I have been familiar with the city long enough. I do not tender my resignation to the meeting. I resign.
Oh, I wasn't expecting you today, Mr. Soames.
So I see. Ah... Oh, this melon smells delicious.
My wife's got a little party, so I was going early.
It looks quite Chinese. There's nothing for you to do at the moment, Gradman, but I came in to tell you to draw my resignations from the Forsyte Trusts.
But, Mr. Soames...
You can keep me and Uncle Timothy's, but the rest must go. Young Roger can attend to them. He's got nothing to do.
Dear me, they won't like it.
Well, then they must lump it. I want a rest.
Then I shan't be seeing you so often, Mr. Soames. There's never anything in Mr. Timothy's. Dear me, I'm quite upset. Won't you keep your sisters?
Well, keep me in hers. I shall be in about my own affairs, of course. Good afternoon, Gradman. Oh, that's a fine melon.
What's the matter, old man?
Michael reached South Square at 6. Tingling, absolutely unimportant, was cowering in the far corner of the hall.
Where is everyone, you heraldic little beast? What's that? Oh, my God!
Fleur! Fleur!
Oh, mon cher Michel.
What on earth's happened?
She has been like this since, oh, 3 hours ago.
3 hours?
Excusez-moi.
This is how one becomes a father.
This is how I became a son. One mustn't worry. Mustn't worry.
Across and across the copper floor of the Chinese room, a cigar in his mouth, the would-be father strode in vague, rebellious agony.
Why should birth be like this, eh, Tim? Of course it isn't in China, is it? There they have a creed that nothing matters.
But something born at such a cost must matter. It should matter. I must see that it matters.
Ah, old Forsyte, he ought to be told. He'll be at his club.
Well, I don't like China tea, Soames, but what can one do? Other teas are so commonplace.
Soames had decided to go to Green Street to see his sister Winifred. Winifred alone represented for him now the past. Her solid nature never varied, however much she kept up with the fashions. She'd taken to a parrot. Parrots were coming in again.
Well, Soames, I think you did splendidly. It serves them right.
That's all very well. You'll find a very different version in the financial papers.
Oh, nobody reads them. Shouldn't worry. Do you do Kue?
Hmm?
Such a comfortable little man, Soames. I went to hear him. It is rather a bore sometimes, but it's quite the latest thing.
Yes, Annette's shown an interest.
And how is Fleur's little affair? I've taught him that. Isn't he rather sweet?
No, I'd shut him up. He'll spoil your curtains.
You'll stay and dine, dear boy?
Yes, I'll dine. I've no wish to go and sit opposite my wife all evening. I'm sure Fleur won't be down, and Michael will only want to discuss that awful meeting.
Good.
Have you a melon, by any chance?
Oh, Lorting, listen. The moaning stopped.
Her father, mon cher, try to find her father.
I've already tried the connoisseurs, the remove, my father's clubs. I can't.
Try Green Street, Mrs. Darty. Courage. All is normal. It will be quite soon now.
Normal quite soon, Lord.
Yes?
Is that you, sir?
Yes. What is it?
Fleur, it began this afternoon at 3. I've been trying to reach you.
What? How? Quick.
Well, they say it's all normal, but it's so awful. They say quite soon now.
What, my God! My hat!
Your hat, sir, yes. Shall you be back for dinner, sir?
Dinner?
8 o'clock. Already. That storm. I might have known. 10 days before her time, why on earth didn't I go straight back? Poor child. Poor little thing. Flower of my life, my Fleur. If anything should... And what about twilight sleep? Nature. Damn it. Nature, as if it couldn't leave even her alone.
Cabby! Quick! South Square. Double fare.
Double fare? Yes, sir.
Let it be over. Let it be over, God.
Well, not yet, sir. Come up to my study. It's nearer.
Ah.
Have a peg, sir. I have brandy here. Huh?
Yes. Well, anything.
Cigarette, sir?
Yes.
Michael had his right arm tight across his chest. Soames, his left. They formed a pattern thus, side by side.
What, over 5 hours?
A long time, sir. Sorry.
Listen.
Michael's hand seized the cold, thin hand of Soames. They sat thus, hand in hand, staring at the doorway.
It is all right. A son.
Oh.
Morning, sir.
Mm.
I telephoned father. Mother wanted to know if the baby has any hair. I told them I hadn't seen him yet, waiting for the summons.
Yes.
In the dining room, Soames was despising the broken egg before him. The journal opened by his plate was of a financial nature.
Anything about the meeting, sir? Your speech must read like 1 o'clock.
Mm.
Ah. Stormy meeting. A resignation of 2 directors. A vote of confidence. Mr. Forsyte, the director involved in a speech of some length, said he had no intention of seeming small. He deprecated the behaviour of all the shareholders. He had not been accustomed to meet with suspicions. He tendered his resignation. By Jove, they've given it a turn.
The papers.
Well, sir, as I was there, all I can say is you and my father were the only two people who excited my respect.
That.
You can come up. She wants you to bring the little dog, mon cher.
Ah. The 11th Baronet.
Isn't he a monkey?
And you, sweetheart?
All right now. But it was... Ting, look.
He's going to reserve his judgment. I needn't tell him that this was brought from Chelsea by the doctor.
Put him down, Michael.
Well, off he goes, straight to his corner without comment. Well, sweetheart?
I mustn't talk. But I want to, frightfully, as if I'd been dumb for months.
I felt as if you'd gone away.
It was like being held down, Michael. Months of not being yourself.
Yes. The process is behind the times. Has he got any hair? My mother wants to know.
It's like my grandmother, see? But it will get lighter. His eyes are going to be grey. Oh, and Michael, about godparents. Your Aunt Alison, of course, but men?
I had a letter from Wilfred yesterday. Would you like him? He's still out east, but I could hold a sponge for him in church.
Is he all right again?
He says so.
Yes. And I think one's enough, don't you? Mine never gave me anything.
One of mine gave me a Bible and the other gave me a wicking. Wilfred, then.
The nurse said I could only have a minute.
Well, I'll see you downstairs, sir.
Oh. Fleur.
Dad. Dear.
The 11th Baronet gurgled his way through the first months of life. He was christened Christopher, but was very soon known as Kit. Though at first Soames had felt a sort of disappointment that his grandchild was not a girl, an 11th Baronet belonged too definitely to the Monts, he began, as the months wore on, to find him
an engaging little chap.
Well, my dear girl and young baronet, I've chucked publishing. With old Danby always in the right, it isn't a career.
Oh, Michael, you'll be bored to death.
I'll go into Parliament. It's quite usual and about the same money.
Michael had spoken in jest, but 6 days later it became apparent that Fleur had listened in earnest.
You know, dear boy, you were absolutely right.
About what?
Parliament. It's the very thing for you.
I was joking.
You've got ideas.
Other people's.
I'm a gift of the gab. We're frightfully handy for the house here.
It costs money, Fleur.
Yes, I've spoken to Father. It was rather funny. There's never been a Forsyte anywhere near Parliament, but he thinks it'll be good for me. And that it's all baronets are fit for.
One has to have a seat, unfortunately.
Well, I sounded your father, too. He'll speak to people. They want young men.
And what are my politics?
My dear boy, you must know at 30...
Well, I'm not a Liberal, but am I Labour or Tory?
You can think it out before the next election.
Since wiping the dust of the city off his feet after that affair at the PPRS, Soames had become almost too countrified for a Forsyte. He'd bought the meadows on the far side of the river and several Jersey cows.
So you are a farmer now, Soames.
No, I'm not going in for any nonsense of that sort. But I like to punt over and see them being milked.
The Parlous State of England by Sir James Fogart.
From Fleur?
Yes. I don't know what she thinks I want with this great thing.
To read it, Soames, I suppose.
Oh, I can't tell what it's all about.
I will sell it at my bazaar, Soames. It will do for some good man who can read English.
I must have my hair shingled, Michael.
Oh, my dear girl, to please me, don't. My favourite bit of your neck will be too bristly for kisses.
My dear boys, if one can help it. You're always the same with any new fashion. You should sport an eyeglass.
An eyeglass?
Well, plain glass doesn't harm the sight, and it really has a focusing value, Michael.
My child, it's never done my dad a bit of good. I doubt if it sold 3 copies of any of his books.
And I must start a salon.
Oh, God.
No more poetry and modern music. Plain people are in the ascendant. People who represent the reality of things.
Michael Mont has returned to Parliament as Tory member for a constituency in Mid-Bucks.
That book's altogether a peculiar affair.
You read it, then?
Well, I must have done. I'm putting down a lot of glass.
More greenhouses? Whatever for?
Melons. The English melon is far superior to any other.
Does Mother agree?
Life with your mother has convinced me that it's best to eat what you grow yourself.
You didn't enjoy the book?
At first, a little. Children being sent out to the colonies at a suitable age seems quite sensible. They put on weight and own property, where here they'd be delivering parcels, hanging about street corners, and qualifying for unemployment and communism. But I turned against it. He's too much of a Jeremiah. The book deals with nothing but birds in the bush. It's unpractical. What does old Mont say?
He won't read it. He says he knows old Foggart.
Well, then I shouldn't be surprised if there was something in it after all. Old Mont's a bit old-fashioned. But it shows Michael's given up those Labour fellows.
Although a sedulous attendant at the house all through the spring and summer, Michael had not yet opened his mouth. And so far, Fleur had approved of his silence.
It's no good starting wrong, Michael. These Labour people aren't going to last out the year.
Why not?
Their heads are swelling and their temper's going. They're only on sufferance. People on sufferance have got to be pleasant or they won't be suffered. When they go out, the Tories will get in again and probably last. You'll have several years to be eccentric in, and by the time they're out again, you'll have your licence. Just go on working the human touch in your constituency. I'm sure it's a mistake to forget you've got constituents.
On Soames Forsyth's 69th birthday, Jack Cardigan, his niece Imogen's husband, made him a present of a set of golf clubs.
What on earth can I do with them?
I suggest you use them, Soames.
Jack Cardigan bet Soames a box of cigars that he could not hit the ball over the river.
Well, I never bet. I don't smoke cigars. How absurd. But I'm not going to have them grinning at me. Missed. Swing! Swing, damn it!
Soames seldom spent more annoying hours than those which followed.
Got it!
The ball fell into the river 3 yards from the bank.
Oh, I'm stiff.
He had, however, become infected.
You destroy more of the lawn every day, Soames.
Oh, I think I'll join a golf club.
With characteristic tenacity, Soames kept at it till he attained a certain proficiency.
You ought to take it up, Annette. It'll do you all the good in the world and keep your weight down.
Merci, Soames. I've no wish to be the figure of your English missus. Flat as a board, before and behind.
You're reactionary, like your nation.
The day after Soames' first 9-hole round with Jack Cardigan, who'd given him 3 strokes a hole and beaten him by 9 holes, he received a package.
A box of cigars? I can't imagine what the fellow thinks he's doing.
A few days later, sitting at the window of his picture gallery, Soames happened to try one.
Doesn't make me sick. Something like that nice feeling after doing coué. Glad that's out of fashion.
My dear boy, everybody's saying you're a different man.
But that chap, Cardigan, is a funny fellow.
The disagreeable summer of 1924 was over, and a more disagreeable September had set in.
Mm. There were no mushrooms, of course, and a good deal of old man's beard.
The river was unnaturally full.
The papers say it's been the wettest summer for 30 years.
Calm, greenish with weed and tree shadow, the river flowed unendingly between Soames's damp lawn and his damp meadows.
The blackberries taste of rain.
But you are eating pears, Soames.
I eat a blackberry every year, and I can tell by the flavour what sort of year it has been. It tasted of rain.
In America, John Forsythe, Fleur's cousin, made friends with a young southerner, Francis Wilmot. Lost one night under a South Carolina moon, John Forsythe and Francis's sister, Miss Anne Wilmot, became separated from their friends and near an old Indian burial mound with the scent of pine trees all around them. They fell in love. A few weeks later, they were married.
Yes, sir.
This is Mrs. Michael Mott's house?
Correct, sir.
Will you give her my card and this letter?
Come in, sir. Mr. Francis Wilmot, Naseby, South Carolina. This way, sir.
Thank you.
Will you wait in here, sir? Dandy, you little devil. That dog's a proper little brute with strangers, sir. Oh, stand still. No, you bite clean through a lady's stockings.
A small fellow for such a reputation.
It's the baby, sir. I'm sleeping there. He will go for people when he's with the baby, but once he gets to smelling your trousers, he's all right. Better not touch the baby, though.
No.
Mrs. Mont was here a minute ago. I'll take your card up to her.
No, Dandy. I shan't go near the baby.
The room, once the Chinese room with the copper floor, was painted in panels of a sub-golden hue with a silver-coloured ceiling. A clavichord, little golden ghost of a piano, stood at one end. The curtains were of gold and silver. The silver-coloured carpet felt wonderfully soft beneath Francis Wilmot's feet. The furniture was of a golden wood.
Why, Dandy, it's the prettiest room I ever was in.
What a perfectly charming thing to overhear.
Mrs. Michael Mott.
So, John's married your sister. Is she pretty?
Oh, she is.
Very?
Oh, yes, indeed.
I hope baby's been entertaining you.
Ah, he's just great.
Yes, he is rather. I hear Dandy bit you.
Oh, I reckon he didn't break the skin.
Oh, haven't you looked? But he's quite healthy. Sit down and tell me all about your sister and John. Is it a marriage of true minds?
Oh, it certainly is. Young John is a pretty white man, and Anne...
I'm very glad. He says in his letter that he's awfully happy. Mm. You must come and stay here. You can be as free as you like. Look on us as an hotel.
That's too good of you. I've never been on this side before. They got through the war too soon.
This creature doesn't bite. Look. Oh. Two teeth. But they don't antagonize, isn't that how you put it?
Oh, what's its name?
Kit, for Christopher.
Kit.
We agreed about its name, luckily. Michael, my husband, will be in directly. He's in Parliament, you know.
Oh.
They're not sitting till Monday. Ireland, of course. We only came back for it yesterday. From Italy. Italy is so wonderful. You must see it.
Pardon me. But is that the Parliament clock that chimes so loud?
Big Ben, yes.
Oh.
He marks time for them. Michael says Parliament is the best drag on progress ever invented. With our first Labour government, it's been especially interesting this year. Don't you think it's rather touching the way this dog watches my baby? He's got the most terrific jaw.
What kind of dog is he?
A Dandy Dinmont. He's a terrible little character. Do tell me, what's John like now? Is he still English?
He is, but he's a dandy fella.
And his mother? She used to be beautiful.
And is to this day.
She would be. Grey, I suppose, by now?
Yeah. You don't like her?
Well, I hope she won't be jealous of your sister.
I think, perhaps, you're unjust.
I think, perhaps, I am. When you write to John, tell him that I'm awfully glad and that I wish him luck. I shan't write to him myself. May I call you Francis?
I shall be proud, ma'am.
Yes, but you must call me Fleur. We're sort of related, you know.
Fleur. It's a beautiful name.
My father's staying with us. You'll meet him when you come back with your luggage.
It's wonderful.
Your room will be ready, and you'll have a bathroom to yourself, of course.
Wonderful. I was just feeling kind of homesick. You know, I miss the sun over here.
That statue's a monstrous great thing.
Lincoln was a monstrous great man,
well,
sir.
What do they want to put it here for? He's not English. Fleur, well...
splendid. Italy suited her like everything.
Oh, they're a theatrical lot, the Italians. But how is the state of the country?
Oh, over a million unemployed. Just been talking to Pevensey Blythe.
Hmm?
Well, you've met him, sir, the editor of The Outpost.
Oh, that chap. I don't read it.
They say of him, what Blythe thinks today, the Conservative Party will not think tomorrow.
He sometimes comes to Fleur's Wednesdays, doesn't he?
Regularly. He says the Labour government will linger on.
Well, they haven't been as bad as they might have been. But then they're not in real power. They have to dance to the Liberal tune. When are you making your first speech?
Oh, that's a nightmare, sir. I asked Blythe how I could introduce Fogartism.
Oh, that!
He thinks we must achieve a body of opinion before I do, at least the impression of it.
Well, that won't be easy. Workmen dislike parting with their children, even at a reasonable age.
Blythe says our trade unionists despise the outside world because they've never seen it. But once they have, they'll develop a feverish desire for places in the sun.
Hello? What's that?
What, sir?
Leaving your house. That young man. Who is he?
I can't tell you, sir, unless it's the Angel Gabriel.
He's got the wrong house.
The label says Francis Wilmot, SS Amphibian.
There's some mistake.
Ah! There you are.
Well, sweetheart?
I've asked a young American to stay, Michael.
Really?
Oh.
John Forsythe has married his sister out there, Dad.
Ah.
You're quite brown, darling. How's Mother?
I had a distressing letter from an Austrian woman today. Mrs. Birkfeld.
Now, don't be long, dear boy. I don't want the meal delayed. We've got a guest.
Her husband's an actor over here. Or rather was. He's a German. He was interned during the war. And his health broke up.
Well, if he's German, of course he'd have been interned.
All their savings went to the PT and they got very little back.
I'm going to grow my hair again. I think shingling's going out. I don't like being distanced by Marjorie Farrar. Oh,
Marjorie Farrar, the pet of the Panjoys.
I notice she already has more than an inch.
Oh, can't have that.
Your bow's crooked.
Well.
What can you do for this poor woman?
I don't know. They lost their little child.
Oh, how awfully sad.
They live on a needle, as she says.
Isn't it better for them if they go back to Germany or Austria? There you are.
Well, they've nowhere to go. No families left. Wish I could help.
Yes, I dare say. But what's the good?
Yes, what's the good?
Now, Ducky, be specially nice to this American. He's homesick. And his sister is married to a Forsythe.
Hmm. I always want to spell your cousin John's name with an H.
Michael Mont, MP, had entered Sapper's Row, Camden Town, from the West End, and against his principles. Here was overcrowded England at its most dismal, and here was he, who advocated a reduction of its population, about to visit some broken-down aliens with the view of keeping them alive.
Mrs. Birkfeld?
Yes?
My name's Mont. You wrote to me.
Oh, sir. Come in, sir. It's like seeing an angel.
Peculiar angel, Mrs. Birkfeld. Your husband not in?
No, sir. Fritz has gone for a walk.
Tell me, Mrs. Birkfeld, if I pay your passages to Germany, will you go?
We cannot get a passport now. Fritz has been here 20 years and never back. He has lost his German nationality, sir. They do not want people like us, you know.
Where are you from yourself?
Salzburg.
Well, what about going back there?
In Austria, everyone is poor now, and I have no relative left. Here, at least, we have my sewing.
How much is that a week?
Sometimes a pound, sometimes 15 shillings. It is bread and the rent.
Well, don't you get the dough?
No, sir. We are not registered.
I've got to think this over, Mrs. Bergfeld. Look, here's my card. Perhaps your husband will come and see me.
Michael emerged from Sapper's Row into the crowded, roaring thoroughfare so pregnantly scented with fried fish, petrol and old clothes. He'd left his card on the washstand, and with it, a £5 note.
I've got a job about you, sir.
What? You spoke to me?
I'm sure I don't know why, sir. Just hopped out of me.
No work?
No. I'm pretty low.
Married?
Widower, sir. Two children.
Dough?
Yeah. Fair sickly.
In the war, I see by your badge.
Mess box, sir.
Oh, what sort of job do you want?
Any mortal thing.
Give me your name and address.
Henry Boddick. 94. Waltham Buildings. Gunnersbury.
Gunnersbury, right. Well, I can't promise anything.
No, sir.
Well, good luck anyway. Look, have a cigar.
Thank you. And, good luck to you, sir.
What can one do? What can one possibly do? The condition of the people. How remote. The Bergfelds, Boddick. And one's supposed to have sweet reasonableness in order to sit in the house. Any more of this and I'll lose it. Some 16,000 of us have sat there since Oliver Cromwell, and the trick's still not done.
That same afternoon, Michael took Francis Wilmot to the house to hear the Irish debate.
That was fine. Who was the gentleman under the curtains?
Well, the speaker.
No, I meant the one who didn't speak.
Well, exactly. He's the dignity of the house.
Well, they ought to feed him oxygen. Must be sleepy under there.
Oh, there you are.
Well, sir. I want to speak to you, but you'd better wait till we get back. I'll come to your study. Well,
certainly. You look serious, sir.
It's a serious matter. You've got a traitor in the camp. Today's evening paper, the Chiff Chaff column. Read it. Just there.
A surprise for the coming session is being confectioned at the Wednesday gatherings of a young hostess not 100 miles from Westminster.
Mm.
Her husband, a prospective baronet lately connected with literature, is to be entrusted with the launching in Parliament of a policy which enjoys the peculiar label of Foggartism, derived from Sir James Foggart's book called The Parlous State of England.
Go on, go on.
This amusing alarm is attributed to the somewhat fantastic brain which guides a well-known weekly. They mean Pevensey Blythe.
Go on.
We shall see what comes of it. In the meantime, the enterprising little lady in question is losing no chance of building up her salon on the curiosity which ever surrounds any buccaneering in politics.
Losing no chance of building up her salon? Whoever wrote that comes to your evenings, that's clear. Who is he?
Oh, it's very likely a she.
Do you mean to say they print such things by women? Will they tell me who it is if I go down there?
No, fortunately.
Well, how do you mean, fortunately?
Well, sir, the press is a sensitive plant. I'm afraid you might make it curl up. Besides, it's always saying nice things that aren't deserved.
But this... Do you mean to say that we've got to sit down under it?
To lie down, I'm afraid.
Fleur has an evening tomorrow.
Yes?
I'll stay up in London for it and keep my eyes open. I'll find whoever wrote this malicious twaddle.
I see no reason why Fleur shouldn't know as many aristocrats, labour members, painters, ambassadors, young fools and writing fellows as might flatter her fancy. She's as good or better than any of them. It's not she who's after them, they're after her.
Isn't the little Mont amusing? Look at her now with Don Fernando. You'd think he was her only joy.
What's this?
She's a born little snob. But that doesn't make this a salon, she thinks. To found a salon, you want personality and wit and the don't-care-a-damn spirit. She hasn't got a scrap. Besides, who is she?
Money,
not so very much. Michael's such dead nuts on her, he's getting dull. Though it's partly Parliament, of course. Have you heard them talk this foggartism? All food, children and the future, the very dregs of dullness.
Novelty is the vice of our age.
One resents a nobody like her climbing in on piffle like this foggartism. Did you read the book?
Hardly. Did you?
No jolly fear. I'm sorry for Michael. He's being exploited by that little snob. Who's that old buffer? Gives me the ginger.
Probably a poor relation. Doesn't seem to know anyone.
Michael!
Yes, sir?
Who's that young woman with the red hair?
Oh, that's Marjorie Farrar.
She's the traitress. Turn her out.
But, sir, we know her quite well. She's a daughter of Lord Charles Farrar, and...
Turn her out.
But how do you know she's a traitress?
I've just heard her use the very words of that paragraph, and worse.
But she's our guest.
Pretty guest.
One can't turn a guest out. Besides, she's the granddaughter of a marquis and the pet of the Panjoys. It would make the deuce of a scandal.
Make it, then.
We won't ask her again, but really, that's all one can do.
Is it? Excuse
me. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me.
You, madam, were good enough to call my daughter a snob in her own house.
I beg your pardon.
You are a traitress. Be so kind as to withdraw.
That'll do, sir. This isn't a peace conference.
I don't know who this person is, but he's a liar.
Pardon me, ma'am. I reckon not.
Francis!
Madame Corelli is going to play the clavichord.
Oh, Lord, Fleur's heard it all.
Come, Quincy. We'll leave.
Oh, yes. Certainly.
How amusing, that horrid old buffer. Bye, darling. What an awfully amusing salon.
I'll make sure she leaves.
Shall we go into the drawing room and listen to Madame Corelli?
A snob.
Buck, darling, if you aren't one, what does it matter?
Who cares what one is? It's what one's labelled.
Well, we've labelled her traitress.
As if that made it better. We all talk behind people's backs. Who minds that? But how can I go on when everybody is sniggering and thinking me a lion-hunting snob? She'll cry it all over London in revenge. How can I have any more evenings?
Well, never mind what people think, my child. Sooner or later, one's got to face that anyway.
You aren't facing it. If I'm not thought nice, I can't be nice.
Only the people who really know one matter.
Nobody knows one. The fonder they are, the less they know, and the less it matters what they think. I hate her, and if I can hurt her, I will.
Well, darling, shall we sleep on it?
I said I wouldn't have any more evenings, but I shall.
Good. That's the spirit.
Blue eyes. Those blue eyes.
All through the house, it was a wakeful night.
Defiant eyes. But something in them said, I pleased her.
Oh, irony. Francis Wilmot, who'd overheard Marjorie Farrar slandering her hostess in the very moment of his refutation, like Saul setting forth to attack the Christians, had been smitten by blindness.
Marjorie Farrar. It's a fine name.
She haunted him. That lissom nymph. With her white skin and red-gold hair, her blue eyes full of insolence, her red lips full of joy, her white neck fragrant as a pine wood in sunshine. The vision was abiding.
She's unlike any woman I've ever known. And I gave her the lie direct.
The stricken young American put on his clothes, stole downstairs, and found a telephone directory.
F. F.E. Farrar, Marjorie. River Studios, Wren Street.
London, in clear air, with no smoke going up, slept beneath the moon.
If I could just locate her windows, I'd be able to go back and sleep.
Down on the water, lighters and barges lay shadowy and abandoned, with red lights burning.
Pardon me, officer, but where are River Studios?
Coming away from them. Last house on the right.
There it was, then. By itself. Back from the street.
She might be behind any one of those dark windows. But at least I've located her.
In the rising wind, Francis Wilmot turned and walked home.
Mr. Forsythe, I believe.
Yes.
My card.
The following afternoon, at the Connoisseurs Club, a tallish man with a moustache brushed arrogantly off his lips stood in the middle of the room. Soames had no difficulty in disliking him at sight.
Lord Charles Fallard. You made use of an insulting word to my daughter last night in the presence of several people.
Yes, it was richly deserved.
You are not drunk, then?
Not at all.
I have the names of those who overheard it. You will be good enough to write to each of them separately, withdrawing your expression unreservedly.
I shall do nothing of the kind.
You are an attorney, I believe?
A solicitor.
Then you know the consequences of refusal.
If your daughter likes to go into court, I shall be happy to meet her there.
You refuse to withdraw?
Absolutely.
I bid you good evening, then.
Good evening. Insolent brute.
But I'll have to find out about him. Ah, old Mont. I'll ask him.
At the aeroplane, old Mont's club, he found not only Sir Lawrence looking almost grave, but also Michael.
Charlie Farrar. Well, he owes money everywhere. He has some useful horses. He's a very good shot.
Well, he didn't strike me as a gentleman. And his daughter isn't a lady.
Oh, steady on, sir.
Oh, single-minded, Forsythe, single-minded. But you're right, of course. There's a queer streak in that blood. An old Shropshire, the grandfather's a dear old man. It skipped a generation. But it's there, it's there. She may bring an action, Forsythe. It was very public. What evidence have you?
My own ears.
Anything else?
That paragraph.
She'll get at the paper. Yes?
The man she was talking to?
Philip Quincy. Put not your trust in Gath.
What more?
Well, there's what that young American overheard, whatever it was.
Ah, he'll take care she doesn't get at him. Is that all?
Yes.
Oh. Say she called you a liar. How would it be to take the offensive?
With women? No.
No, quite right, Forsythe. They have their privileges still. What does Fleur say, Michael?
War to the knife.
Ah, well, that's a woman all over. No imagination.
Well, that's what I thought at first, sir, but I'm not so sure. She says if Marjorie Farrar is not taken by the short hair, she'll put it across everybody, and that the more public the thing is, the less harm she can do.
I think I'll go and see old Shropshire. My father and his shot woodcock together in Albania in 54. He's 80 and gets gout in the stomach, but he's brisk as a bee. The grass shall not grow, Forsythe. I'll go there now.
Well, young Mont, have you brought me another of your excellent books?
No, Marquis, I've come for your advice.
Ah.
Your granddaughter, sir, and my daughter-in-law want to fight like Billio.
Marjorie? I draw the line. A charming young woman to look at, but I draw the line. What has she done now?
Called my daughter-in-law a snob and a lion hunter. And my daughter-in-law's father has called your granddaughter a traitress to her face.
Bold man, bold man. Who is he?
His name's Forsythe.
And is his daughter a lion hunter?
She's a charmer. Likes to have people about her. Very pretty. Excellent little mother. Some French blood.
Ah, the French. Better built round the middle than our people. What do you want me to do?
Speak to your son, Charles.
I never speak to Charles. We haven't spoken for 6 years.
I beg your pardon, sir. I didn't know. Sorry to have bothered you.
No, no, pleasure to see you. But, my dear young Mont, what shall we do with these young women? No sense of service, no continuity, no hair, no figures. But if I run across Marjorie, well, I'll see. I'll see.
There's a man to see you, sir, by the name of Bugphil.
Bugphil? Oh, where have you put him, Coker?
Well, I didn't know what to make of him, sir. He shakes all over. I've stood him in the dining room. Mrs. Mont is in the drawing room with Mr. Wilmot.
Mm. Excuse me, sir, I'd better see this chap.
Oh, sir, certainly, certainly.
Ah, you're just in time to say goodbye, Father.
Huh?
Mr. Wilmot is leaving us.
Oh, goodbye, Mr. Wilmot. If you're interested in pictures, you should look in at the British Museum.
I will. It's been a privilege to know you, sir.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Wilmot's going to France, Father.
Oh, the French.
Paris?
Yeah, I'll be writing to John from there, and I'll surely send your love. You've been perfectly wonderful to me. I'll be glad to have you and Michael visit me at any time you come across to the States. And if you bring the little dog, why, I'll just be honored to let him bite me again.
Yes, I gathered from Mrs. Birkfeld you're on the rocks.
Fast.
Your health and your name, I suppose.
Yes.
You want an open-air job, I believe. Look, I haven't been able to come up with anything frightfully gaudy, but an idea did strike me in the stilly watches of the night. Poultry. Everybody's doing it.
If I had my savings...
Yes, Mrs. Birkfeld told me about them. I can inquire, but I'm afraid...
It's daylight robbery.
I know. Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Oh, for my wife's sake, I will do anything. But unless I get my savings back, how can I start?
I can't promise, but perhaps I could start you. I might be able to persuade my governor to lend me a bit of land. Leave it to me to think it out. We'll be able to do something, I hope. Well, I'll see you out, Mr. Birkfeld.
He's gone.
Oh, that's rather sudden. Anything upset him?
Why did you make that fuss last night, Father?
What?
What good do you think you've done? You've made me feel as if I couldn't look anybody in the face again. But I'm going to all the same. If I'm a lion hunter and a snob, I'll do it thoroughly. Only I do wish you wouldn't go on thinking I'm a child and can't defend myself. I'm sorry, but I can't help it. Everything's ruined.
Ruined?
You didn't. You couldn't have tried. You betrayed me, Father.
Well, it's unjust. She's unjust. What am I supposed to do when someone insults my own daughter in my hearing?
Soames stood at the window looking out. He saw some pigeons peck at the pavement and fly off again. He saw a man kissing a woman in the dusk. He saw a policeman light his pipe and go off duty. He saw many human and interesting things.
They mean nothing. Nothing at all.
Suddenly, Soames realized that he was staring at a silver spoon.
Silver spoon. Yes. And I myself put it in her mouth at birth.
All right, nurse, I'll finish him. He's been in 3 minutes, Mom.
Lightly boiled.
You are very noisy for only 14 months.
By the way, Francis Wilmot has gone.
Why?
He's off to Paris.
What was it he overheard last night?
Do you suppose I asked?
Well, no. No, of course not.
Leghorns, Orpingtons.
In his study,
White Sussex,
Michael looked up the word poetry in a volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
There's that bit of land beyond the coppice. Bart lent it to me. Wonder if there are any war huts left. Could buy one. Buy some poultry stock and start a colony. The Bergfelds, that man, Henry Boddick. They could use the timber from the coppice for the fowl houses. Growing food. A practical experiment in Foggartism.
Tell Fleur I'm going to her aunt's.
Leaving her, sir?
Yes, I'm not wanted.
Well, you'll see her before you go, sir.
No.
Is there any money in poultry farming, sir?
There's no money in anything nowadays. You better see that Fleur doesn't go about abusing that red-haired baggage. Fleur thinks she can do what she likes. She was born with a silver spoon in her mouth.
In episode 12 of the Foresight Chronicles, Gawsworthy was Dirk Bogarde. Soames was Alan Howard, Fleur, Amanda Redman, and Michael Mont, Gary Bond. Paul Damon played Sir Lawrence Mont, Belinda Lang, Marjorie Farrar, Simon Treves, Francis Wilmot, Fiona Walker, Winifred, Shelley Thompson, Annette, and Jack May, the Marquis of Shropshire. Gradman was played by Brian Miller, Mr. Bergfeld by Ben Onwukwe, Mrs. Bergfeld by Tara Dominic, Henry Boddick by David Bannerman, and Lord Charles Farrar by James Green. John Moffat played Sir Luke Sharman, Ian Lindsay, Mr. Saldry and Philip Quincy, and Danny Schiller, Mr. Tolby. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Anthony Cornish.